This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Monday, November 13th, 2017. I'm Caleb Brown. Airlines may not be as competitive as we might hope, and how the market for air travel is restricted means airlines can only innovate and compete among a narrow range of factors. Gary Leff is the Chief Financial Officer at the Mercatus Center and a blogger at View from the Wing. We spoke last week about costs and benefits of airline regulation and innovation.
I saw a story in the New York Times basically detailing how Spirit Airlines, among others, are trying to, on the one hand, put more seats into planes, and they're seem to be very open about what they're doing. They're saying, look, we put more seats on the planes so that everybody can fly for less money. And there are groups like Flyers Rights that are fighting for, I assume, additional regulation of airlines that are trying to provide, you know, sardine quality accommodations for a very low price.
Right. So, you know, the thing to understand is, you know, the traditional measure of space when we're talking about legroom is called seat pitch. It's the distance from seat back to seat back. And an airline like Southwest Airlines is going to give you 32 inches seat back to seat back. American is now squeezing that down to 30 in some seats. United squeezes that down to 30 as well. It's not the comfortable product that I really want to fly if I can avoid it. And I think it's important for consumers to know the difference in the products. Southwest and JetBlue are going to offer more legroom. So when they're making a choice at a similar price point, but the ultra low cost carriers, Spirit, Allegiant, Frontier, are going to offer even less, down to 28 inches. That's very tight. So a group called Flyers Rights has been raising the issue since 2010, since before United, Delta, and American have been squeezing their seat pitch, saying that those the really tight seating that a Spirit offers, that Frontier now offers, is potentially a safety issue. So they petitioned the FAA for a rulemaking where they say, look, you know, there are evacuation standards and you have to be able to demonstrate that people can get off the plane meeting these standards and, you know, gosh, are they going to be able to with that limited pitch? The government basically, in a fairly technical rulemaking, blew off the request. And so a federal court ruled that they didn't really follow proper regulatory procedure in doing that. The FAA said, look, we have the studies, but they didn't detail the studies. And so they're going to have to go back and kind of redo their work. But this is news now because the largest carriers are reducing the amount of space in economy that passengers have, although not all airlines. And so there are, you know, there are choices that consumers have.
All right. So this seems like a fairly narrow issue in a way, if you're thinking about how airlines are regulated and how air travel more broadly is regulated. Flyers Rights seems most concerned about the safety issue related to people egress from rows and people evacuating from planes. But, you know, is there, what other regulations are there that raise similar issues about safety, or at least the opportunity to change the way air travel is done, that what might maximize safety?
Well, so I mean, I would push back on the notion that they're most concerned with egress. It's the fulcrum around which, you know, they believe they have an opportunity to make a case, and, you know, it's generated quite a lot of sympathy from politicians. People hate, you know, love to hate the airlines, and they've now had some success in court, at least pushing back on the idea that they're completely blown off in their request for a rulemaking. Where really, you know, they want more space in coach. They want it to be free. It doesn't really work that way. In fact, what you've got in the U.S. market is these ultra low cost carriers that offer less legroom, really driving down the price that everyone offers travel at. So people are able to get Delta, American, Alaska, Southwest, JetBlue flights less expensively because of these carriers are in the market. And what the regulation would do is effectively, you know, ban the Spirit and Allegiant Frontier business model. It's going to drive up costs for everyone. And it's these Spirits and Frontiers and Allegiants that bring people, you know, not just, you know, offering lower prices for people who are going to fly anyway, but take people off the roads, take people out of buses, and air travel is a safer method of transportation. So, you know, although the, you know, ironically, they talk about safety, it is a way of putting people into laissez forms of transportation. Now, the airline industry, we often talk about it as being deregulated, and so we think that it's a huge free market, anything goes in air travel. Nothing could be farther from the truth. When we talk about deregulation, what we really mean is, unlike prior to 1978, the federal government is not the one deciding where airlines fly and what prices they charge. Deregulation means that airlines get to choose where they send their planes and what prices to charge for tickets, and prices have gone down. Right. Virtually everything else in air travel is heavily regulated from the time you enter the airport, where you've got government not just setting security standards, but in most airports actually performing the security function. These are, for the most part, government-owned and operated airports. Even in towns, cities, geographic areas where you have multiple airports, they're often even managed by the same government entity. So you don't have competition at the government level across airports frequently. And then the planes, once they take off, are being managed in terms of where they fly by government air traffic control. The planes themselves are heavily regulated in terms – if you wanted to change windows in an aircraft, it can take maybe 3 years for the government to certify that you can – your new windows. So it's an incredibly regulated industry. There's very little room for innovation. And then there's even protection for incumbent carriers as well as subsidies, right? So foreign airlines can't simply enter the U.S. market. You couldn't have Singapore Airlines and Ryanair come fly between Orlando and Los Angeles. It's simply not legal. So that protects them from competition.
And so, and you also mentioned before we started talking, access to gates. What is the role there, and how does that change the calculus of airlines when it comes to pricing?
Sure. Well, the major markets, airports are congested, and some of that's air traffic control, but it's also that there are long-term leases signed by incumbent airlines for the gates at government airports that they've negotiated with the local airport jurisdiction. And new airlines simply can't enter the market. And in some cases, take Dallas Love Field as a great example. Up until very recently, you could only fly to contiguous states out of Love Field. That restriction was lifted. It had been called the Wright Amendment, which was put in place to limit competition that Southwest was going to offer to the incumbent airlines when they began service. But as part of that, there was a method that protects Southwest at Wright Field. At Love Field, which is that they reduced the number of gates at the airport from 32 down to 20. And by the way, Southwest controls at least 18 of them. It's incredibly limiting. You can't just start a new airline. The government airports don't just expand. And then the question of how much revenue the airports have is a political question. There are ticket taxes that fund airport construction that the incumbent airlines argue against raising because they don't want, in many cases, more gates unless the gates are going to go to them. Interestingly, Alaska Airlines purchased Virgin America, and the biggest reason they did it is access to the gates that Virgin America was able to obtain over the last decade that they simply couldn't recreate themselves in congested airports like in the Northeast, like at Dallas Love Field. So they're able to expand in a way they simply had no other opportunity to.
So access to gates is quite an asset then.
Absolutely. The gates are valuable. The inability of other airlines to get gates prevents new competition.
And so the access to gates, part of that is driven by this government ownership of airports?
Well, these are very expensive capital projects. They are politically driven. There's often regulatory capture where the incumbent carriers are very much closely aligned with the airports where they are the largest carrier. There's a number of other elements to it too. It's difficult to expand for environmental noise pollution, sort of local NIMBY kinds of reasons, given that these are very much government determined with citizen participation and incumbent interests aligned with neighborhood interests often prevent growth.
In your estimation, if Flyers Rights were truly interested in the safety of travelers, not just air travelers, but travelers, what kinds of regulatory changes should they be asking for?
Well, before we start asking for regulatory changes for safety, I think we have to recognize how safe air transportation is. It's incredibly safe. It's increasingly safe. It's safer than it's ever been, and it's safer than other modes of transportation generally. And so it's simply not where I'd be focusing in efforts at improvements in safety, because it's not an area where we live unsafe lives in the skies. That having been said, there are always improvements that you can make and lessons that you can learn. I mean, we've gotten to the place that we're at because every time something has gone wrong. One of the areas where I think that government does a pretty good job is in its investigation of problems and determining what has gone wrong when there have been issues in aviation. There are fantastic professionals who've done those jobs, and it's been a century of learning that's gotten us to this place. So it's just not. It's simply not an area of concern.
So then you would argue then that to help with regard to the safety of travel in general, we should be doing whatever we can to accommodate more people who want to fly.
Oh, I mean, more people having access to flying. And that's one of the things that's been fantastic over the last 40 years since deregulation, when prices have gone down and more people are able to fly. And there was even a term for Southwest Airlines as it grew and entered new markets. It was referred to as the Southwest effect, which is that it would take people off of the roads and into the skies. You had more passengers than you ever had before because they were bringing access at convenient schedules and low prices to people. And frankly, that's what Spirit and Allegiant do today, albeit in less comfort than Southwest has offered. You have to pay for your full-size carry-on bag. You don't have a lot of space. They'll charge you for water. I mean, this is not a luxury experience, but it is certainly a safe experience.
And people who are shoppers, there are multiple dimensions along which airlines could be competing. The government has prevented competition along some of those dimensions. But to the extent that price is a key competitive lever, these airlines have decided, well, look, these people aren't interested in a luxurious experience. What they're interested in is fast, cheap travel.
Yeah, and here's the other piece of it: is that the federal the risks getting a lot worse. So in 2014, the Department of Transportation put forward a notice of proposed rulemaking where they were considering requiring the information that would be displayed with every display of an airline schedule, where they decided what information passengers ought to have when they're buying a ticket, which would effectively crowd out innovation for giving information to passengers that might inform them with what was useful. So what they considered, and they ultimately didn't act but haven't decided not to act, they considered saying that you always had to see a set of fees along with your ticket purchase. So maybe the first checked bag or the second checked bag or a change fee had to be displayed. And one of the things they considered was requiring a pop-up on your screen, which of course was silly because it doesn't work very well in mobile, and the direction that most travel booking is going is booking in mobile. But what that prevents is the kind of competition to figure out what different consumers want to understand to make the best choices for themselves. I mean, I love the startup Route Happy, for instance, that combines information about in-flight internet on a given flight, about meal service on a given flight, about the in-flight entertainment experience. And different people are going to value different things. But right now, really, all that's deployed is this information on schedule and price. And it's not surprising people make decisions on the basis of schedule and price. It's both important. It's also the information that's easiest to get. There's a lot of legacy technology involved. There's a lot of regulation involved. But there's also the potential for it to get a lot worse if the DOT were to move forward on an area of regulation that they've appeared interested in the past that would basically require customers to wade through said information that may not be what's most relevant to them, making it more difficult to get other information that could potentially be illuminating about how to improve the travel experience that they're interested in. As I say, do you have seatback TV? Do you have streaming entertainment? Do you have fast internet or slow internet on your plane? I mean, these are things that different people may care about.
Right. It reminds me a little bit of mandating calorie counts on fast food restaurant menus. It's calories are certainly an important measure, but maybe somebody cares more about vitamin C or carbohydrates or fat or protein.
Yeah, you know, and this is the thing is that we actually do see early innovation in providing better information to consumers. You know, what we really had in the development of online booking was, you know, move away from travel agents. Now we can romanticize travel agents; they weren't all good. But once upon a time, you would have somebody who would be able to tell the median consumer, is it a good idea to take a connection in Chicago in the winter that's 45 minutes, or should you take a different connection? And you don't use, there's something lost as we've gone to the web for online booking, but what we're beginning to see is a further development of an innovation of mass customization, where you take data and consumer behavior and try to offer consumers the information that's most useful to them. It's still in its infancy, but there are a lot of competitors in that space. And that's, I think, what you want to see, not kind of freezing in time the information that you decide that all consumers have to have.
Gary Leff blogs at View from the Wing and is the chief financial officer at the Mercatus Center. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast at iTunes and Google Play, and follow us on Twitter at Cato Podcast.